Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhar Sri Vasa Gaurava Bhakta Nanda Vijaya Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopina Shami Kundu Radha Kundu Kiri Govardhana Ki Jaya Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jaya Tur Dhamma Ki Jaya Navadvip Maya Kodhara Ki Jaya Jaya Puri Dhamma Ki Jaya Gangamaya Jumuna Devi Ki Jaya Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya Tulsimarani Ki Jaya Samaveda Bhakta Nanda Ki Jaya Gaurakrani Ki Jaya All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Nirmala. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama Om Vishnu Pai. Krishna Prasadam Vipalishim Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Gauravan Katani Yose Sisamigami Pasachari Sitani Vande Nam Sri Guru Sri Dhamma Kamala Sri Guru and Vaishnavasta Sri Rupam Sadhujatam Sadhana Raghunatham Vitam Sadhujivam Sadhavitam Sadhujutam Padijana Sadhitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Sri Vishakam Dumasha I chop with you the Shaki Vasimaya Vitapati Tanam Kavanya Vashmi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Nishan Yavitam Tadanam Gavardhanam Vajasya Krishna Brihita Manasa Ajagvaranyonyam Malakshito Jayam Tayama Ajagma anyonyam alakshito jama Sayakrikanto jaloka kundama Nishamya
Hearing
Gitam
The music
Tat That, Ananga, keep it. That literally means someone who doesn't have a body. Why doesn't keep it have a body?
You
burned him.
Which
Vardhanam, which fortifies Vajasriya, the young woman of Raja. Krishna, by Krishna, Krihita, sees Manasa. Whose minds? A jagmu. They went. Anyonyam. To one another. Alakshita. Unnoticed. Ujjamaha. They're going forward. Saha. He. Yajja. Where. Kantaha. Their boyfriend. Jaha. Because of their haste. Lola. Swimming, Kundala, whose earrings? UBT translation. When the young woman of Vrindavan heard Krishna's lute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back. UBT purport. Apparently, each gopi went secretly, hoping to avoid advertising to her rivals the fact that young Krishna was in the mood for romantic affairs. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti poetically describes the situation as follows, quote, Krishna instigated a terrible act of thievery in Vrindavan when he played on his flute. The song of his flute entered through the ears of the gopis into the inner treasure chamber of their hearts. That wonderful music stole all their most valuable possessions. Their sobriety, shyness, fear, and discrimination, along with their very minds. And in a split second, sang this music, delivered all these goods to Krishna. Now each gopi went to beg the Lord to return her personal property. Each beautiful young girl was thinking, I have to capture that great thief. And thus they went forward, each unknown to the others. They heard the song which increased love, which was previously present to the Lord. In the last verse, the song was described as attractive. The intention of the present description of the flute is to show the intensity of the attraction. This love, ananda, without material parts, is a type of prema and excludes material loss completely. Or, though it is without material parts, it has spiritual components. So here he's looking at ananda not as one of Cupid's names, but meaning it doesn't have any material parts to it. So this is again hermeneutics, and you can take a word and you can say, well, it can mean Cupid who doesn't have a form, or it can mean that they're in love and only spiritual. The women of Rajahari new youth had their minds attracted to or absorbed in Krishna previously. Because of his attractive nature, hearing the song, they went to him. Now, he's given a little different explanation for the following and in the BBT report. Or though they belonged to groups, so most of the gopis are in groups. Not all, there are some who got called in groups, but most of the gopis aren't in groups. Or though they belong to groups, they desire to go on their own unseen by others, because now they have lost all discrimination, being attracted to him strongly. Or they did not form groups, now this is the same point in the BBT report, but at rivalry, which manifested as part of the special prayer, they went alone. Or at haste, they could not inform their friends that they would go. So here we have again, this is again looking at three different possible reasons why they went alone without telling anybody else. What were the reasons?
They went so fast they couldn't tell anybody.
They went so fast they didn't have time to tell their friends they were gone. Or rivalry. They didn't want anyone else to know they were going.
They had lost discrimination.
They didn't have any discrimination. They just forgot that I had to tell my friends. They came with their earrings swaying. The word came is used because Sukadeva had Krishna within himself. Thus the gopis came to Krishna, who was in Sukadeva, and Jiva Goswami elaborated on that, but he elaborates on this also. Or because of describing the event, he also participated in going and had a vision of Krishna appearing close to him. Isn't that interesting? Then when we talk about these pastimes of the Lord, that we can also experience some of these emotions. Or a jagmu can mean they approached him, or they went giving up everything. This is explained later. They came when he, the player of the attractive flute, or he who long desired by their vows because he was their master or source of attraction, was standing. This is for Kandaha. Or Kandaha can mean he who produces lasting anta, happiness, ka. So Kanta usually means a lover, a beloved, but here's not just what we say, but also mean one who gives lasting attraction. Nishanya kitanta avananga bardhanam vrajasriya krishna gavita manasa ajagmur anyomyam alakshito jama sayatra kanto javaloka kundala. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back and forth. So the Lord calls and you just go. Right? We're going to read in the next verse how they left various responsibilities. But here they left their, they lost everything. They lost their minds. They lost their discrimination. They lost their shyness. And this response to the call of the Lord is something that is explained as a phenomena by anybody who runs to the Lord in any faith. And I'm sure that all of us have experienced this, not to the level of the gopis, but in some way, yes, the Krishna called and they're like, I'm going. Yes? Did we all experience that? Even those of you who were raised in Krishna consciousness, at a certain point you're like, I'm going to dedicate myself, I'm going to take initiation, I'm going to become serious devotee, I'm going to follow this call of the Lord. And the people around you think you're nuts. Isn't it? Just think you're crazy. And this is true, you know, thinking of like St. Francis of Assisi. You know, he's from this very wealthy family, and I'm just going to dedicate my life to God, and his family think he's crazy. Raghunath Das Goswami, his family tries to tie him up. They try to close guards. And they think you're just crazy. What about all your money? What about your wife? What about me? I mean, I remember when I decided I was going to move into the temple ashram in Chicago. And I had been planning for many months. I was just waiting until I finished that year of school. Until I was 18. And then, you know, came home a few days after school ended. It was a Saturday. We would always have our Sabbath lunch together on Saturday. And I got this invitation in the mail that the next day in the afternoon, Kishore, we were going to be installed in Chicago. And it was very strong, this feeling of Krishna saying, you must come now. That was it. Because I had told everybody, you know, I dropped out of school and I would just move in the ashram, and everybody was telling me I was crazy. Except my father said, I'm so glad you're looking for God. He said, I wish you did it in our own religion, but that's not important. But everyone else told me it was nuts. And everyone else was trying to stop me. My family, my friends. And I said, I'm going tomorrow. And it just left everything. Right? So we all have some similar story like this. So we're just like, I'm doing this. And for the next 10 years, my mother thought I was crazy. I mean, we have some parents who think their kids are so crazy, they would hire deprogrammers. And they would kidnap their kids. Right? And they would torture them to try to get them to leave. And this phenomena of running to God, you know, nobody really understands it. Materialistic people just can't understand it. They think, well, you must be brainwashed. You must be a cult. There must be, you can't possibly be thinking rationally. So it's everywhere that at a certain point a person's like, I'm here. And in Christianity, they call it a call, right? I've been called. This is my calling. You know, again, not that we're hearing the flute song in the middle of the night. You know, I got an invitation in the mail. But it's like that. And there's a sense of urgency. Since I have to do this, I mean, Srila Maharaj, and we don't advise doing this anymore, but you know, he was 2 weeks before graduating as an engineer. 2 weeks. And he left. You left, I think, one semester. You had one semester left, Maharaj? Before you were going to graduate?
I just didn't fulfill the requirements of any.
But how much more did you have?
I had finished 4 years.
You had finished 4 years, you just had
to switching majors.
Yes. She had 2 weeks left. And he had a wife, and his wife is like, I'll try to get interested in Christian consciousness. And he's like, forget it. You gotta be full on. And he just dropped everything. I mean, now we advise people don't quite do it like that. But that was the mood. You know, even if you finish your degree and you don't run away from your spouse, that mood of I have to do this, I have to go, never mind anything. Nothing. My family, my education, my job, my possessions, my responsibilities. I want God. should remember with these Gopis that they had waited a long time, especially the silence of the Gopis. You know, that we describe the silence of the Gopis. They come from various groups. Some of them were sages with Ramachandra. And they saw Ram and they're like, I want you. And he's like, sorry, as Ramachandra, this they cut me up and it's not happening. But you can wait till I come to Krishna. But that was a long time, yes? Or the personified Vedas also, and they were watching the Leela. But you have to wait till next time, next cycle. Then you can come get someone else to do your job as the personified Vedas. So they've been waiting for millions of years. I mean, sometimes I feel a little impatient. When? But imagine waiting millions of years, and then of course you maybe take birth in Vraja as a gopi, and then, you know, the little gopis are doing their katani vrat, and Krishna steals their clothes, and he says, okay, now I fulfilled your desire by stealing your clothes. But that, you know, sort of, kind of, he says, later we'll dance. And then they have to wait. They're waiting. We were talking about Janmasthami, how Lord Vishnu told the demigods, I'm going to come and kill Kamsa, kill these demons. And how many years was it between that assurance and when Kamsa was killed?
50 years.
Somewhere between like 45, 50 years. So, you know, Lord Rama says, yes, I will accept you. It's millions of years. Then finally they hear the flute in the middle of the night after waiting for millions of years. So it's like, shh. They just ran. Not only did they, their, you know, in-laws or parents or siblings-in-law, they didn't deal with that. They didn't even tell their friends. They didn't even tell the other members of their groups. They're just, we're gone. And think about where they were going. They were going into the forest. You know, most days I take a walk here by and I walk past the woods. I'm not really like eager to run in those forests. Kind of scary. Right? And one time when I walked, there was a dead coyote. And you saw that dead coyote? It was by the side of the road for a long time. I just run in the woods with those coyotes. You know, poison ivy. I'll go to the nice park, you know, I'll go to the post walk and there's a path and the government's maintaining it. And the coyotes just ran in the woods. Even at the time of the Goswamis, what kind of animals were in the woods?
Tigers.
Tigers! Man, they started fighting with us this one. Poor tigers. And not only were there tigers, every day they heard about Krishna killing a demon. That was scary. That was the middle of the night. And they just ran. And they just didn't consider. There's tigers, there's monsters. There are two monsters. And they just ran. So this is this intense mood. So today is the anniversary of Srila Prabhupada taking sannyas, and I thought that it was very appropriate to have this verse about the gopis just running to Krishna in the middle of the night with Srila Prabhupada taking sannyas. And this is much too much to read, so I hope I can remember all this. I read it yesterday and I read it again this morning, and I'm like, please, Mata Srishan, and the Prabhupada, please help me remember all this. So Srila Prabhupada had several dreams of his spiritual master asking him to take sannyas. We know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta asked Srila Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was a young man, please preach in English to English-speaking people, which could be interpreted in any ways. And of course Srila Prabhupada wrote English magazines in India and distributed them in India with very limited, you know, it wasn't like some big project. And he also tried to open a center in Jhansi to preach in English, which was stopped by the wife of the governor. Mm-hmm. And then he was publishing magazines and stuff. But even as a Vrasta, he had this dream where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta beckoned him to take sannyas. And Prabhupada's response to the first dream was, I need to build up my business, I need to make a lot of money, and once I have a lot of money, then I can start this preaching. Now this way of thinking is very common. You know, I can't do something until I've done something else. I have to lay the foundation first, get all, you know, everything together. And I mean, when I was just talking to you about this yesterday, when I was working on the Learn to Read books, I meditated a lot on this pastime of Srila Prabhupada, because I started that project with nothing. I had a little bit of savings, I had no income, I had no team, I just had nothing. I had really no hope materially whatsoever of ever publishing that. It was impossible. But I thought, you know, previously I thought, well, you know, let me first get money, let me first get a team, let me first get an office, let me get, and I had tried that for years. And various wealthy people had made all kinds of promises that they didn't follow through on and so forth. Long story. But I had tried to do it in that way. And finally I said, you know, I'm just going to do it. And maybe nothing will ever happen. And that whole time I kept meditating on, this is the way it happened with Srila Prabhupada. That he tried to do it. And his business, he said, was very successful. He said all the other pharmaceutical companies knew that he had this big, successful business. And Srila Prabhupada was thinking, yes, this is how I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to be ready to do my... And then it started falling apart. Just start falling apart. And again, in another dream, which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati called him to take sannyas. And again, he thought, how am I? And I'm ready, I can't do it yet, it's not a problem. In 1950, he was barely running his business. Practically, it had failed. You know, he was doing a little bit here and there. And he became a renunciate, lived for about 4 or 5 years, completely homeless, just going from one place to another, working on magazines. Then he got the room in Radhanamadhar temple, where he lived for another about 4 or 5 years. And again he had a dream. So then he approached his godbrother, Bhakti Vilastirtha, I think his name, his name was Yavin Kunjipari, who was running the Chaitanya Math. And there had been, I have some Gaudiya Math friends who always tell me, the Gaudiya Math is not a monolith. If people just say, the Gaudiya Math, there's lots of different Maths. And they're run by different heads, and it's not like some just blob. So at that time, because of a lot of legal difficulty, the Chaitanya Math was the legal Gaudiya Math. So from a legal perspective, the Chaitanya Math was supposed to be represented as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So Srila Prabhupada went there first and talked to Bhakti Vilastirtha and said, you know, I'd like to take sannyas. Our Guru Maharaj keeps calling me to take sannyas. And I want to print books in English. I've been working on these books. I've been translating, writing these books. I want to print these books. And I want to go to America and I want the sponsorship of the Math. So I hope I can find this place. Please. The letters that... Oh. Oh, gosh. Sometimes technology does what you want, or sometimes it doesn't. Okay. So Bhakti Vilastirtha Maharaj wrote back to Srila Prabhupada, at that time point was known as Vaishnava. He said, those who are against Chaitanya Mahi are motivated by their individual ambitions. They are acting illogically and against the instructions of Bhakti Siddhanta. He said, the thing you have to do now, the thing you have neglected for so many years, was to join our Chaitanya Mahi and act under my authority. So this is what Bhakti Vilastirtha was saying. Here tomorrow is mentioned several members of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recently accepted sannyas and said, why do you become one after a while? He said, you can live at the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We have rooms that are airy and well-lit. We will treat you exclusively. There won't be any difficulty. But as for printing books, we're eagerly awaiting to print books like Satsang Dharma Vedanta and many other rare books by the Goswamis. First, we will print them. Then, if the funds can be raised, books written by you will be checked by the editorial staff, and if the funds can be raised, then they can be printed according to priority. The books will be printed only if they are favorable for the service of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, if the fund is raised, and there is a plan to go abroad as well. Okay. And then Prabhupada wrote him again, asked him again, and Bhakti Lester Tamaj wrote back, my suggestion is don't make any hasty decisions. For the time being, you stay with us and engage yourself in the service of the society and then accept sannyas. The purpose of accepting Chaitanya is to serve the society. If that is your desire, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will decide about your going to America to preach and make all the arrangements. It can never be the principle of the society to let one act according to his individual attempt or desire. The society will decide after consulting with the heads what is to be done by whom. That is what I want to say. First of all, it is necessary to identify oneself with the society. In order to preach in America or in other foreign countries, it is important to have a dignified organization in the background. And secondly, it is necessary to establish oneself in India before going to preach in the foreign countries. Now it is that there are no conferences or meetings in the West as before. I thought that was pretty funny. Communication is done through the media of television. I also thought that was very funny. So, Srila Prabhupada didn't pursue that further. And I'm not really going to comment on this, Prabhupada didn't pursue that further. So instead, he went to another brother, he went to Keshavarsh. In Madurai. And Prabhupada had stayed here before. In fact, he donated the deity of Lord Chaitanya that was on the altar next to Radha Krishna, but he'd spent time there before. And he wrote to Keshav Maharaj and he says, you know, our Guru Maharaj keeps coming to me in dreams, telling me to take sannyas. He's asking me to preach in English. I've been writing these books. I want to take sannyas. I want to get my books printed. I want to go to America. And Keshav Maharaj said, you come, we'll give you sannyas immediately. And so that's what he did. And it was a small ceremony because it was done so quickly there was no time even to invite anyone. One of his godbrothers, who was 90 years old, also took sannyas and became Muni Maharaj. And this is when Prabhupada started to be called Bhaktivedanta Swami. And Keshav Maharaj's disciple, Narayan Maharaj, performed the yajna and chanted mantras. Keshav Maharaj spoke in Hindi, and Srila Prabhupada, much to everyone's surprise, spoke in English, although not very many people there could understand English. And Keshav Maharaj did not put any kind of stricture on Bhaktivedanta Swami, as Bhakti Lasir Tamaraj had tried to do. But he just said, you know, you're going to do what Guru Maharaj wants you to do. It's very interesting, Srila Prabhupada wrote this letter once. He said, from my godbrothers, I got compression, repression, and repression, but I was not a person to be discouraged. And it's also interesting, there's a purport, and I can't remember if it's the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Prabhupada writes about Bhakti Vasudeva Swami, not my name. And he said that in his service, what he wanted was the properties of his Guru Maharaj. He said, so Krishna gave him the properties, but not the mission. So that was Srila Prabhupada's conclusion after this correspondence with Bhakti Vasudeva Swami. That he'd gotten the property, he had won the case, he had gotten the legal property of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's legal property, but he didn't understand the mission. His idea was control. His idea was not preaching. His idea was not facilitation. I've been speaking quite a bit lately about how both Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada really emphasized that if there's centralization in bureaucracy, everything becomes killed, everything becomes spoiled. that there has to be a scope of commitment who always emphasizes individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. You know, to give people a fresh challenge and help them rise to a challenge. Proper found a place where that was actually understood. So this is something that we don't want to forget. It's not that this call that we get is a one-time thing. Prabhupada says in 24 hours, Krishna is constantly, imperceptibly calling us, isn't it? It's not just that I got called on that, you know, day in June 1973, and okay, now I followed the call and I packed my suitcase and I got on the plane and that's it. But it's a constant call. Are you coming? Are you coming? Are you coming? And it's always increasing. Right, we have the word here, Vardhanam, Anandam, Puri Vardhanam. The ocean is always increasing. Right, or Govardhan always going, anywhere, 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 give me more, give me more, give me more. And like, give me more, 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 give me more now. But there's, here Krishna is being compared to a thief by the Srinachandra example. But of course, whatever Krishna is taking is actually a giving, isn't it? Don't we experience that? Don't we all experience that? I mean, on an external level, Prabhupada's plans were taken. His business was taken. His specific type of plans were taken. But, and it appeared for quite some time that there was nothing going on. As I said, he lived like 4 or 5 years homeless in this county, Paisa, not just really sort of Paisa, to take a train to see a daughter without knowing if he had the money to return. It's pretty extreme. I doubt if any of us have lived within that level of poverty. And even when Prabhupada eventually came to America, you know, when he came to America, he was sponsored at this home in Butler. He lived in the YMCA, and then he's, you know, staying at the grace of Dr. Mishra, that impersonalist in New York. Nothing seemed to be happening. When finally things started to be happening, they didn't seem to be happening with the sort of people that he had originally talked about. He was looking for, you know, educated leaders in society. He was getting these, you know, societal dropouts, basically. You know, when, what's his name? That professor. Anyway, he came to New York because he heard that there was an English translation of Bhagavatam. He wrote his dissertation on Bhagavatam. He couldn't believe there was another English translation. Hoppins. And so he thought, is there really another English translation? And he comes and meets the devotees and he sees the Bhagavatam. And he says, what is this? And they said, oh, that's the Bhagavad Gita. You know, they didn't know anything. And he said, you know, who translated this? Oh, the Swami. Oh, where's the Swami from? Oh, he's from India. He says, what part of India? And the disciple says, India has parts. Yeah. And so the Professor Hopkins thought, I'm not even going to ask about Chaitanya. I'm not even going to ask about Chaitanya. These were the kind of people that Srila Prabhupada was attracting in the beginning. And so it didn't seem for quite a while that Krishna was giving. It seemed that Krishna was just taking. But in a very short time, one could see that Krishna had given abundantly and in some amazing, wonderful way. And so it may appear that Krishna is taking. But what is Krishna taking from us? He's taking from us only our suffering, isn't it? You know, we think, I got to hold on to this in order to, I got to hold on to this in order to. You know, and then finally we just say, okay, just take it, I don't care, I'm just coming, you know. Then we find that whatever he took was just causing us misery, causing us difficulty. And that what he's giving is this ever-expanding, Anandam Guri Vardhanam, yes, today, Vardhanam, the just expanding ocean of nectar, Now, I see Nama Raman after he sees Krishna, he's just diving and surfacing in this ocean. So, we shouldn't be afraid and calculate materially, you know, there's tigers, there's monsters, there's this, there's that. How will I do this? How will I do that? But to be willing to respond to the call, even if the world doesn't understand. The world will never understand. There's no way the world will ever understand. To the world, it will make no sense. So, questions, comments? Yes, Mr.
I think it's also important to note that not everybody in the Gaudiya Math really was an obstacle, like B.R. Sridhar Maharaj wasn't. And there were many God brothers who appreciated the Prabhupada.
Well, obviously, Keshav Maharaj was an obstacle. So, the Prabhupada was talking about that, he was talking about certain people.
Yeah,
he had a lot of God brothers with whom he had very good relationships, and he really encouraged him. Yes.
So in the beginning we were talking about how, you know, everyone just sort of ran to be with Krishna, or the devotees ran to give up everything, and then the point came up at the end of class how that call is always there. And what I had been reflecting on in the middle of the class is, you know, how can one avoid becoming stagnant?
How can one avoid becoming stagnant
and complacent? And not allow themselves to hear the call.
The main causes of becoming stagnant and complacent are committing offenses, especially against other devotees. And like Prabhupada said, you know, not blaspheming devotees, he said, don't blaspheme Jesus or Mohammed, you know, having an attitude of pride. That's the main problem. And the other problem is just fear. Thinking, you know, if I run to see Krishna, what will happen to me? And then to have association with other people who are running to Krishna. And see, they've run to Krishna and they're okay. And not only are they okay, they're happy. And they have everything, so I don't need to be afraid. Having that association through the Shastra that we read about, and having our association in our daily life. Prabhupada, ki jai. Shri Prabhupada taking sannyas and coming to America, so we're all sitting here today. Ki jai.